the Grizz Fan Podcast. I'm Luke.
And I'm Mike.
And that was Lainey Lou and the Bird Dogs playing us in. Thanks, Lainey Lou.
All right. So, Luke, we were excited last week because we had a sponsor. But what happened this week that maybe was more monumental in this pod's history?
What was that, Mike?
Both of our parents discovered that we have a podcast this week.
I didn't know my parents knew what podcasts were. I thought I was safe there.
Well, one of our buddies broke the code and shared it on Facebook, so my mother found it, and she was all excited, and we can only determine that she hasn't listened to it yet, or she'd be concerned about the profanity.
We dropped an F-bomb, at least one apiece.
I re-listened to it, there's more than one. So, Mom, we'll work on that. No promises. Other thing that she was excited about was our sponsor is from Butte.
Hotel Finland.
Yeah. Hotel Finland, FINLEN.com. Last week we told you how cool the Hotel Finland is in the middle of historic Uptown Butte. Some might call it the crown jewel of Uptown. It really is a neat place. You stay there and you can walk to all the fun places in Butte. I would encourage people checking it out. If you're ever in town for a Montana Tech game or any other Butte event, cool place to stay for sure.
What I like about the Hotel Finland is the Cavalier Lounge. It recently installed the Smooth Hopperator, which is this contraption that infuses your beer with fresh fruit and ingredients and chills it just to that like nice, frothy, cold temperature. There's nothing I hate more than a warm beer.
Really? Like nothing? Nothing.
There's nothing.
So we would probably need to confess that the Smooth Hopperator was on the notes for last week's ad read. And I don't think we read it because neither of us had any idea what the hell a Smooth Hopperator is. But now that it's been explained to us, apparently the Cavalier Lounge is the only bar in the country that has a Smooth Hopperator. And I think you and I are going to have to go check this out.
It sounds like it's worth the trip. When you talk about infusing things into other things, I'm all in. The Cavalier Lounge also has a lot of live musical acts that cycle through. So come and listen, enjoy some of the greatest Montana beers right on tap there while you're listening to some great Montana music.
Yep, so great hotel, great prices, something different for everybody. Hotel Finland, Butte, Montana. Finland.com, F-I-N-L-E-N. And with that, let's get started. So the Grizz won this week. I don't know if you were there.
I was there.
I know you were there.
We were there together.
Well, we weren't there together. I sit in my perch in the front of the north end zone and keep an eye on things. Lucas was high class down there on the field for parts of the game.
That was fun. It's intense down there. And that's maybe one of my first impressions of this whole game. The excitement and the energy was super high in the stadium. And it felt like Grizz Nation is really responding to Bobby being back.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You could kind of see it as the week went on that it was just more exciting around town. People who, you know, the hardcore fans are excited no matter what, but kind of that next tier seemed more excited about going to the game, being there. I mean, it helped that it was a night game, but the tailgates were busy, they were jam-packed, and that stadium was loud.
Yeah, and we started off with a bang.
First of all, I think, you know, we talked about this last week on the pod, but don't overreact either way, and you know, it's a big win, but we're at home, and we do better at home, and Bobby Hug's teams are prepared.
I was overreacting after the first half.
Yes.
The Grizz went up 26-0 after the first half. I mean, I was so damn excited. They went on to give up 23 unanswered points to make this thing a little tighter. There's a lot of anxiety, but we come out with the win. How do you feel after the game?
You know, it's interesting, because I was there, and so the second half, you know, made me nervous too. Then I rewatched the game, and I have a little bit different take. I mean, obviously, it's like we were winning 26-0, and we won 26-23. So we gave up a lot of unanswered points, which is a concern. Like, you'd like to be able to hold the ball a little bit more. I think we only had 3 first downs and less than 100 yards in the second half.
That's problematic.
Yep, and, you know, a couple things we talked about last week, you know, time of possession. I mean, we killed it in the first half. Killed it. But Luke was wrong because we won the game without winning the battle of time of possession. Northern Iowa had it for 30 minutes and 47 seconds. So, you know, real tight race there.
Do you think it was an issue of the Grizzlies not being able to make the adjustments in the second half, like on the fly? Or was it that our coaching staff maybe felt, well, we can game manage a win out of this. We've got 26 points.
I think it's more the game management answer. And I don't think that Bobby took his feet off the gas per se, but it definitely felt like we didn't do anything razzle-dazzle to try and get a first down in the second half. It was just trying to line up and do what we do well. And I think that probably part of that was they probably felt like, you know, we've got a good lead and, you know, we're going to be able to make something happen here. But this is also the first opportunity to, you know, we got to do what we think we are as a team. But rewatching it on film, I'm not as concerned about it because there were a lot of little mistakes that I don't see them making again.
What are some of those mistakes talking about?
Like a drop pass for a first down that would, you know, ran another couple minutes off the clock. You know, there was a missed block. I think that in the second half, Snead took off too quickly from the pocket.
Let's talk about Snead a little bit. Okay. We can go on to these other mistakes maybe by position group.
Yeah.
So Snead, I mean, on paper, looks like he did pretty dang well. 26 of 39, mm-hmm. which is over 65% completion rating. Yep. He threw for a touchdown. He didn't throw any picks. He didn't fumble the ball. That's a good day for a quarterback.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a great day. And I think that we all should be excited about the performance Snead put out there. I'm going to say I'm cautiously excited. I think that, first of all, we've talked about it before, we've got such tremendous offensive coaches that they put in a game plan to get him comfortable and going in the first half, and they knew what they were doing. You know, lots of short passes, roll out of the pocket a little bit, get him moving.
His legs seem to be an asset.
Yeah, led the team in rushing.
He had 58 yards on 15 carries. He sprinted off. He was shot out of a cannon to score our first touchdown of the game on almost a 20-yard run. Is this something to be afraid of, though? Can a quarterback rush 15 times a game and expect to last the whole season uninjured?
I mean, I'm not going to say they can't, because obviously there's going to be examples. Someone's going to find an example and tell me I'm wrong. But I don't think that's a winning formula. He's the most outwardly kind of vocal, rah-rah, tough guy QB that we've had in as long as I can remember, honestly. And you get the impression, I mean, he plays like he kind of thinks he's invincible.
Mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you, even if, of course, they're not going to say it out publicly, but in film study this morning, when they went over the film with the players and graded them out, they checked him down quite a few times on leaving the pocket too soon. Because I don't think he can take 15 hits a game.
That was my first impression, is that he's taking off so much. I don't think he's getting to his second read sometimes. And
not
definitely
in the second
not,
half, not at all.
Definitely not his third read.
Yep.
But then another part of me thought, well, maybe as this offensive line matures, his ability to scamper is going to get us some wins.
Yeah, I think that's a thought that the coaches share, and I believe that you're probably right. I think that one of the reasons I think they brought him in and that he was competing with Jensen in the spring and maybe had the upper hand was because the offensive line is so young. But I will say, watching the game, like, there were times where he took off where he had a pocket that he could have stepped up into. And there were other times, we talked about kind of mistakes that were made in the second half, where, like, he had some guys open that if he'd seen them, you know, 15 yards, another set of downs, like, I'm less concerned about that because I think that with film study and proper coaching, some of that stuff's going to get cleaned up. I also do think that UNI is one of the better teams we're going to see this year. I mean, I don't know that they're the best, but I think they're one of the better ones, especially on defense.
Yeah, that's something we should acknowledge first, is we gave up 23 unanswered points to the 13th ranked team in the nation. We can talk about what polls mean and everything, but that's a good team.
Oh, yeah, this is a good team. This is a good win. Like, For game one of a new era with new coaching staff, you know, taking over players that weren't his, like, this is a big win.
So ultimately, do you think, like, how much do you think a Tiger can change his stripes? Like, how much can Snead mature in a year? And do we even need him to change his stripes? Can we get by with this version of Snead?
Well, we can get by with 66% completion rating and no picks. I do think, just like looking at the stats, Keenan Curran's touchdown pass to Bingham, which first time we've seen a trick play in forever, was 25 yards. Snead's longest pass was 29 yards. I think we're going to have to develop a little bit more of a downfield game to keep teams honest, because we really struggled to run the ball this week, and I think part of that's our O-line is young, but also it's a damn good defensive line.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if we only can show this on film game after game after game, the good teams are going to adjust and take all these short routes away.
Yep, so it's like they've got to figure out, because if his reads are two quick short routes and I take off, you know, then you figure it out. And in the second half, Northern Iowa did. You know, he didn't have as many big scrambles in the second half. In fact, I don't know that he had any real good scrambles. And there were times where he took off to run and he gained 2 yards. And it's like, yeah, it's a positive play and we should take that and yada, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, it's like if he'd stayed in the pocket for another second and completed a pass 8 yards down the field to a receiver who then might have got yards after the catch, who knows? So it's like, I think that some of that we need. And it's interesting because that's one of the, that's been the biggest difference between him and Jensen in the spring, was they're just kind of different quarterbacks. But it's interesting to see because those receivers are used to the ball being thrown down the field. And obviously when people are winning, you know, you get over a lot of stuff, but I don't think those receivers are going to magically be like, oh, I'm okay not ever getting thrown a deep ball.
Do you know what would be a good release valve for a quarterback? A running game.
Yeah. Oh,
God. That's something that I flagged immediately as maybe our biggest problem right now is our inability to really run the ball between the tackles.
Mm-hmm. I mean, inability is almost generous. I mean,
so I think, Eastwood got the start.
Eastwood got the start, and he looks the part.
Yes.
I think we do have to say, you know, I think this is one of the best D-lines we're going to face. But what did they have combined, like 19 yards rushing?
Yeah, Eastwood had 9 attempts for 15 yards. And beyond Snead's 17-yard scamper for a touchdown, the longest rush was, what was you told me?
4 yards.
4 yards.
4 yards.
So it kind of forces us to be, that's like a dimension that we're not going to force people to really think about.
Yep. And you noticed it like in that last drive of the game to seal it, we didn't run the ball once. In a time where you run the ball 3 times and you get that damn near a minute, you punt it. I mean, I don't know. But they obviously, they didn't trust the O-line to get it done. And, you know, credit to Snead and credit to those receivers. Eastwood was one, Torrey was one, and was it Curran maybe? There were 3 catches on that last drive. They all made clutch plays.
That was big.
So running game, I don't know. I mean, maybe we miss Justin Calhoun more than we think, or Jeremy Calhoun, sorry, more than we realize. It'll be interesting to see how he's worked back in. But that's definitely something that we need to work on. But that's one area where every Bobby team I think we ever had, his O-lines got better as the year went on. So in my mind, you know, if this is the baseline against a really good team, then it's not time to panic. Now, if we don't make things different, coaches will notice it on film.
I also find myself kind of wrestling between the need or the want to win, like now, to think I'm in national championship mode, which is so unrealistic.
Not at all, Luke. Not at all.
Bobby he's in his first year, right? He's going to build his squad. And I think in 3 or 4 or 5 years, right, when he can get class after class of his recruits in, we can expect to see the offensive line or the caliber of recruit he built his success on. Mm-hmm. Right now, I feel like it's kind of like that scene in Apollo 13 where they're trying to like do that engineering problem and they just like throw a bunch of shit on the table and they're like, all right,
what can work here. Yep.
And Bobby beat a very good team with a bunch of pieces on a table. And, yeah. And maybe that's not being respectful enough to the players, because these are awesome kids.
Oh no, it's not a talent thing. I mean, I think this group of guys is going to get really good. They're just young. I mean, yep. I think there was one start between all the offensive linemen before Saturday.
Yeah.
So it's like, you look at it that way, and it's like the growth that they should make from, you know, game one to game two to game five to, you know, the end of the season should be significant. Like Colton Kintz, I mean, I don't think he started playing football until his junior year in high school, and here he is, redshirt freshman, starting at tackle.
That's so incredible.
I mean, I think that they are optimistic that they've got a lot of potential to work with in that O-line. And it's going to be fun to see how it goes. But yeah, this year they're going to have to figure things out. But like I said, Brent Pease, Tim Rosenbaugh, they're creative guys. Like, they're going to figure out a way to have a run game. Might not be the greatest run game we've ever had, but they're going to figure out a way to make it something that the opposing teams have to consider.
Let's flip to the defensive side of the ball. I first have to issue an apology to Justin Calhoun.
Yeah, and me.
And Mike. Sorry, Mike. Sorry, Justin, if you ever listen to this. I was a little bit hesitant to claim that he's going to be a wonderful cornerback, but he played wonderfully.
I mean, he did great. And he got, you know, he got picked on a little bit in the second half, but, you know, corners get beat. And that happens time to time. I was telling Luke, as we were kind of getting ready to start recording, that I can't remember a cornerback that we've had in recent memory. I'm talking about post-Jermaine Johnson. So recent memory. Who stayed glued to his man so much. I mean, he was just always there. He's got closing speed. I mean, I think that he's a guy that if he'd wanted to play cornerback out of high school, he would not have been a Grizz recruit. So I think we're lucky to have him, and I think you're going to see some good things. And Nash looked pretty good, too. I mean, they look more than serviceable.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. You know, Northern Iowa didn't throw the ball very well, but at the same time, that starting quarterback, he went like 5 of 20, and he was a all-conference QB last year for them. I think second team. He threw 26 touchdowns last year for Northern Iowa. It's not like it was some slouch. He's got a good offensive line. He had good protection. Like, one, if there's a knock, and one of the other things that we talked about was I had said last week that the key to win was that the Grizz need to have more sacks than Northern Iowa. And they did. It was 2 sacks for the Grizz to 1 for Northern Iowa, but it wasn't the D linemen. It was Calhoun and Dante Olson.
Mm-hmm.
Sims, I think, had 1.5 tackles for a loss, and that's about it. So they didn't get dominated. They actually held well against the run game, very well. But they didn't get much pressure. And I think that's maybe a factor of how good the O-line for Northern Iowa was. But it points out that the defense played well. I mean, that wasn't Chris Murray at quarterback.
I really think that this is the signature Bobby Houck style that we all kind of expected was... This team played really, really hard. The Grizz defense brought a lot of intensity. I think they got tired in the second half, but they fought the whole game. This is exactly what we all expected. It's what Bobby promised. To see the team deliver on that promise felt really good.
Yeah, you know, the first half, you were just like, man, these guys, they got what they needed. And I remember in the first half, I was sitting there thinking, something I've said a lot is that Bob Stitt, for most positions, was a good recruiter. Receiver, obviously, was his premier spot. But there's a lot of talent on the team. There's some glaring weaknesses that we have to acknowledge. But what they were missing was the attention to detail. And it was clear in the first half that it was there. The second half, it kind of reverted back. And I think Houck said in the postgame press conference something about how he said it in the halftime locker room, but he didn't think the team believed him because there's a lot of guys playing their first real action and maybe were too confident that it was going to be all right. And they did. They made some mistakes. And going back to what I was saying when I rewatched it, like the second half, like there were a lot of mistakes that if they had cut them even in half, this game wouldn't have been close. Like Flowers kind of half tried to field and then swatted out of bounds that kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
So one of our drives in the fourth quarter started at the 5-yard line. Jerry Louis McGee, who was awesome.
Incredible.
Incredible. And we'll talk about why the hell Northern Iowa punted to him in a minute. But he, you know, had a boneheaded play. You know, it's like you can't run backwards when you're on the 5-yard line. You know, that happened. So it's like, you know, a couple drop passes, a couple things where even if you get better field position, you still don't get a first down. You're pinning them further back. So it's, I think that there's things that they can clean up. So I feel pretty good about it. But, you know, Jerry had an awesome game. You know, it's like, it was fun. You couldn't wait. Like, that defense was fired up. And it's like, you can tell that defense almost feeds off. Let's get a stop so they have to punt to Jerry.
Yeah.
Did you kind of get that impression a little bit?
Yeah, and it's fun. The students, they start chanting, Jerry, yep. Jerry. Like, the electricity builds in the stadium. With the punt return that Jerry had in Northern Iowa the last time they played, why the hell? They know what he is.
Yeah.
What are they thinking? It felt so fun that he delivered on all of the hopes.
Yeah. It's like knowing he didn't run back for a touchdown, but in that first half when it mattered, when we put up all those points, he averaged over 20 yards of punt return. I mean, they might as well have just gone for it on fourth down.
He is so shifty. Like, I don't think I could tag him in a phone booth. I would just be swinging and missing. Oh, my gosh.
I might, because I'd take up more of the phone booth. But, you know, that's all right. The other thing that I saw pointed out on Twitter by Andrew Schmidt, former Grizz running back, who's now an agent. I think he lives in Denver.
Yep.
But, you know, he's a big Bobby fan. He played for Bobby. And it's kind of fun to – he's a good follow on Twitter because he makes good observations about – sports and
Grizz football. He knows his football.
Yeah, and so he was watching the game, and he pointed out that Bobby was coaching Jerry Louis McGee before and after. You could almost read his lips, like, trust the punt return, trust the return, you go right here. Like, he said that it's clearly more coaching on returning a kick than Jerry's ever gotten before, which, you know, that matters, and it's going to be interesting to me because it's tougher, in my mind, if we've got a guy back there that teams get the feeling like we can't punt this guy, that's such a benefit for our offense because they're not going to risk, you know, it's like they risk trying to kick it inside the 20 and down it with this fearless guy who's going to take it and run it versus, you know, do a shorter kick out of bounds, which helps us. So I think that's going to be interesting. A couple other things about the game that stood out to me. I think, first of all, you could catch Bobby on the sideline a few times, and he looked genuinely euphoric to be back. You know, like, this whole thing since he got hired about how he loves Montana, he's Montanan, and stuff like it's not an act.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's real.
Yeah. I paid special attention to him when he was coming out of the tunnel. Took a little video of it. He looked so at home. He looked so ready to be here. I just can't think of a better coach we could have got.
Yep. I would agree with that. So a couple other notes on the game before we move on to the, you know, other fun stuff in the pod. The NIU's coach, or UNI's coach, Farley, who's been there forever, and I kind of said on the pod last week that I think he's kind of a dick. I also kind of think that he's not as good a coach as people give him credit for. Like, he's clearly a good recruiter, and they clearly coach good fundamentals. You know, and the NFL is full of these guys, like good coaches, you know, run a good staff, but their game management is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
His game management is awful.
So let's talk about that second half. He burns a timeout in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
He burns a timeout really early in the fourth quarter. And then, flash forward, there's 4:07 left to play. They're down 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's 4th and 17.
They have one timeout left.
And what does he do?
He sends out the punting team. I mean, it's like I turned to my dad in the stands and was like, what is he doing? I know it's easy to armchair coach a game, but it's like can you not do basic math? I mean, you're down 2 scores with 4 minutes and one timeout.
Yeah. I mean, imagine that you punted there, right? There's 4:07 left. Let's pretend that the punt only takes 7 seconds, which is modest, right? Mm-hmm. The Grizz then get the ball back, 4 minutes left. You're looking at 240 seconds. Just think about it in total seconds.
Yeah.
I was trying to do the math on the field with our buddy Dylan. The Grizz then get, you know, presumably, let's say, worst case scenario, run the three times and punts.
And let's say Northern Iowa used their timeout on one of those three plays.
You're still looking at 70 to 80 seconds burning off the clock.
Well, I think maybe more than that. Probably 90, because you think about, you know, each play takes a few seconds off the clock and you milk that clock down. You got to reset
the ball.
And then it's like, so, you know, let's say you take 100 seconds off.
No timeouts. That's wasting almost 40% of the clock.
Yeah, not even 240 seconds. 2 minutes and 40 seconds. So it's like you got 2 minutes and 40 seconds after those time runs off. You have no timeouts, and you score twice.
It's why would you ever send out the punting unit?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. So they have to burn the timeout, bring the offense back on the field.
And they convert the 4th and 17, which...
How the hell did they convert it?
Like, if we're going to criticize Farley, this is one moment where I think maybe Howe made a coaching error. he had a coach's challenge and we had timeouts. So they could have called a timeout or challenged it. I think 4th and 17, when if you stop them, like, that game is over.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the middle of the field, I think you got to take a chance and challenge it. And I think the counter argument that I've heard someone say is like, well, you don't want to stop the clock from running. And they ran up and ran a new play and like 3 seconds ran off the clock.
It was a tough moment for me. I just had flashbacks of some PTSD of 3rd and 33.
Ugh. And he snuck out of the backfield and wasn't covered. Yep. I'm sure the difference is that I'm sure this defensive staff will correct that on tape. But the other thing it kind of drives me nuts is I don't completely understand how college football replay works, but I'm sure it has to do with the quality of the person sitting in the replay booth. Because there were a couple plays where I was like, man, they should look at this. And that, to me, like 4th and 17, if that thing's close at all, you're hitting that button.
I think you're right there.
It's interesting. So you go look at the play, and it's like, he probably didn't make it. It might have been hard to overturn because it's like he's going back. His body's in front of the first down marker, but he's going back towards the quarterback to catch the ball.
Uh-huh.
And when the ball first touches him, he's probably right about the first down marker. But when he secures the ball into his body, he's clearly behind the first down marker. So, you know, it's a matter of opinion, but hell, you know, look at it, give your team some time to catch their breath, make a plan, you know, because the defense got gassed a little bit in the fourth quarter and they still needed 2 scores. So it's like, you know, maybe that would have worked, but it is what it is.
Burn a timeout, maybe, but definitely every coach needs to have like some 12-year-old boy who just plays 36 hours of Madden every week and knows every end of the game scenario. Right, like some savant Madden football player. They've seen it all. They're like, ooh, I don't know, coach, 407, you gotta go for this.
Yeah.
Like, the math doesn't work out here. Trust me, I've played this scenario 1,000 times.
Yep. But, you know, it's like, that's funny because it's like, that's one thing that I think Madden has actually made some, like, casual fans better at. It's like, you've got a lot of time to manage that clock. You can figure that out down to a science, right? I mean,
yeah, totally.
You know, you clearly have a lot more in-game coaching experience than they do because they're not playing Madden. So,
yeah, I mean,
and you're playing 150 games a year as opposed to 12. So
guilty.
So Farley, you know, the other thing that was interesting to me is they go on and they score, and then they didn't kick an onside kick. And they have no timeouts. And it's like, yeah, you know, our offense has done nothing.
Well,
we got one first down and the game was over.
Yeah, especially when you know, all right, one first down and the game is over. That first down can come on your 45 or it can come back, you know, on the 35 or 25. It's just one first down, the game's over. At least give yourself a chance to recover the onside kick.
So credit to him that he changed quarterbacks midway through the third quarter because that was the spark. Although, you know, rewatching it, it's like the guy only completed 50% of his passes. So it's like, again, going back, I think there's some things to correct. I just think that we weren't prepared for the slightly different style, and that's what happened in the second half. So I feel good about it. One other thing I want to point out about this game, you know, we said there's a Bobby Houck moment where he should have challenged. I want to give Bobby credit for getting that field goal right before halftime. Because
mm-hmm.
The old Bobby, I think, would have just been content to run the ball. But instead, they moved the ball down the field and kicked a field goal that proved to be the difference in the game. Not only that, giving credit to another guy that I maybe criticized earlier, but Snead got UNI to jump off sides and knew that he had him off sides. So what did he do? He chucked the ball to the end zone. It hit a Kem in the corner, and the UNI defender ended up with it because it was a jump ball. But Snead knew that it's a free play for the offense, and he took a shot. And I'll tell you what, like, I think a Kem at the end of the season might make that play. I think that a Kem needs to get a little bit more physical fighting for the ball. But, man.
But heads-up play.
Heads-up play by Snead, and credit to Houck for going for it.
Snead plays Madden. That's what I think.
Snead knows. Snead knows the clock.
I want to say bravo to Semenza, because after shanking an extra point, he really recovered and hit 2 field goals throughout the rest of the game. So, impressed by that kid.
Yeah. So, a few things to work on. You know, we need more points with good field position. You know, we had a great first half, but it could have been a lot better. So, there's something there. I will say that you and I seem to get almost every break. How many times did they fumble and recover?
They fumbled 4 times and we didn't get
any of them. And it's like you read their Twitter a little bit and people were like, oh, they're just getting all the bad breaks. No. They really could have had a worse performance than they did. They had one turnover on that interception of Dante Olsen. Even if those balls go 50-50, it's a whole different game.
I read a Bill Barnwell fumble analytics article a few years ago on just NFL. So this is NFL analytics versus college. It might be a little different, but there's some reason to think that they're the same. And he was talking about how lucky maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were at that point of the season because they had re-recovered like 80% of their balls. Mm-hmm. And the average is 50%. If you drop a ball, it's a coin flip on whether or not you're going to get it.
Yep.
So we easily should have got at least one of those balls.
And these sports statisticians will talk about, it's like one run wins in baseball. They'll say like, over the season, that's going to get a lot closer to the mean than you would expect. So it's like, they just had some bad luck. They still won the game. One more shout out, the O-line did shut down UNI's number 7, the big D-tackle slash linebacker, or DN slash linebacker that we talked about.
Yeah.
Which is great.
He was a stud, and he didn't get any sacks, tackles. I don't even think he pressured the quarterback.
It was awesome to see Josh Bush out there. He played and contributed. They were smart with him, but he started and he played, so that was awesome. Players of the game, offense and defense.
Offense, I'm going to say Dalton Snead.
All right.
Defense, there's only one answer here. It's the defensive player of the week.
Yeah.
It can't be Calhoun. Yep. It's got to be Dante Olsen.
Yep. Dante Olsen did get the Big Sky Defensive Player of the Week, which is awesome and well-deserved. I think that we're excited about him.
He kind of reminds me of Lauren Utterback, for any of you old Grizz fans who knew deep roster guys. Lauren was a stud from Fort Benton, Montana, ran me over more than once in high school. They're like very athletic, similarly built. I'm really excited about Dante.
Yeah, well, that'll be fun. So mine were Dante as well. Shout out to Calhoun, obviously, because that's great. But a lot of guys on defense played well. But Dante, you know, shined above. And my player of the game on offense isn't actually Snead, but it's Keenan Curran. You know, Curran had one big drop that was a bummer. But he also, in that first half, every time Snead needed a crucial play, he hit Curran and Curran caught it. And, you know, then he throws that touchdown to Bingham. I mean, so he was my offensive player of the week because sometimes I think the quarterback gets it if they have even a decent game. One more knock. We got to tell the DJ, you cannot play Cotton Eye Joe too early. Whoever is the DJ, he did this last year too. And it's like, they'll play it if we get way ahead in the first quarter and then bad things start happening. So if anybody's to blame for the second half, it's the DJ.
We need a new Cotton Eye Joe guy. Do you remember that?
I do remember
him. Do you remember that guy who used to sit in the front row of the student section or stand?
Yep.
And he would do that big like arm swing in front of him. We need a new that guy.
Well, I think that we can let Grizzly Athletics know that they should be looking for that guy.
We're taking applications.
Yeah, we're taking applications. So all's well. All right, so let's look at the Big Sky real quick. What happened this week in the Big Sky? Start the game Thursday night. There was Weber State and Utah. We both picked Utah.
Yep.
And Utah won. Weber State didn't look all that great. That's about all there is to say about that. But it is Utah. Next game, UC Davis and San Jose State. Both Luke and I picked San Jose State, and both of us were wrong.
Wow.
Yeah.
UC Davis put up 44 points.
44 points and like 500 yards passing or something like that.
It's a potent offense that we're going to have to...
Yeah, we talked about it in our preview. Like, they have a legitimate QB.
Yikes.
The one thing going there is they don't appear to have an off or defense because San Jose is terrible. And then the other Thursday night game was Western Illinois and Montana State. We both got this wrong. We started out poorly.
Montana State won.
Yeah, they came back. You know, credit to them. They were losing by a decent amount. And last year, I'm not sure they would have won this game. They would have mounted the furious comeback, but come up short. Troy Anderson had a great second half.
His rushing stat line was amazing. 24 attempts, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns.
His passing, he completed over 50% of his passes with like 80 yards or something like that.
That's going to be a problem.
Like long term, it's like he's got the it factor. And, you know, Luke and I both are big fans. I'm just not convinced he can be QB all season. They need more of a passing game than that. It's the same thing we talked about with Snead, but to a much bigger degree. You need to be able to pass the ball in this conference.
All right, let's move on to the next day. We had Idaho State versus Western State.
Yep, Idaho State beat Western State's insurance of little guy football in Missoula. So that's about all we need to know about that. Both Luke and I picked that correctly. And then Portland State, you know, put up 19 on Nevada to look respectable, except for the 72 points Nevada put up on Portland
State.
What
happened?
Well, Portland State's bad.
72 points.
We both picked Nevada, so we're good there. Saturday, Cal Poly played North Dakota State. We both picked North Dakota State. The spread on this game was 33 points, I believe. And Colter Nuwana is the ESPN radio guy and Skyline Sports guy, was joking about how that's a terrible spread because for an option team, there aren't enough possessions. And this just tells you how special North Dakota State is because they beat them 49-3.
Oh, my God.
McNeese beat Northern Colorado, but only 17-14, so we both got that right. Central Washington lost to Eastern Washington by quite a bit, so we're good there. Northern Arizona, they beat UTEP. NAU 30, UTEP 10. So that's a nice FBS win, even though you beat UTEP's probably terrible.
Yeah, but that looks good for the Big Sky Conference.
No, you take those. I got that correct. Luke did not. It's troubling because there's a couple games that are like, what's the most embarrassing for the Big Sky this week? North Alabama went to Southern Utah, scored a touchdown with like 14 seconds left to win 34-30. We both picked Southern Utah, so we got that game wrong. North Alabama is in their first year of FCS eligibility.
That is embarrassing.
Yeah, the barometer is, I think they play North Dakota State next week or the week after, so we'll just see how that goes. Sacramento State destroyed St. Francis, as you would expect. Northern Iowa obviously lost to Montana. And then Luke's favorite Big Sky team not named Montana, Idaho, put up 13 points at Fresno State, but gave up 79.
I did not think there is enough time in a game to score 79 points.
It was unbelievable. We were sitting with some buddies after the Grizz game just chatting about the day in football, and I was reading some stat, and it was like Fresno State blocked 2 field goals and returned them for touchdowns. I mean, it was almost the same play. It was the same guy, same side of the field, just go. So for the week, Luke went 8-5. I went 10-3. We'll see how well that holds up. And we'll pick the rest of the Big Sky a little bit later in the pod.
Awesome.
So we got some feedback, you know, from our listeners, which is great because it means we have listeners.
We have listeners.
More than just our buddies, apparently. Our parents.
Our parents, yeah. We're so, hey, Mom.
they suggested we need a few reoccurring or occasional segments.
So a segment that we're introducing this podcast is called Word Associations and Random Takes. So in this segment, I'm going to give Mike 3 quick questions. Mike, you have to answer them fast, all right?
You get no guarantees.
And I'm just going to ask you a question, and you have to say the first thing that comes off the top of your mind. Question 1. Better quarterback, Dalton Snead or Keenan Curran?
Snead. Was that not fast enough for you?
That was pretty fast. Better catch, Torre's game-sealing grab or Stacy?
Oh! Stacy.
That was too much time. That was too much time.
Luke's trying to ruin my marriage.
Third question. Which Frank Ocean song best resembles our special teams and Jerry Louis McGee?
I have no idea. Mostly because I know who Frank Ocean is, but I couldn't tell you a single song Frank Ocean played.
The correct answer is Forrest Gump. And I want you to read the lyrics to a part of this song, just so you can tell why this is the only answer.
I know you, Forrest. I know you wouldn't hurt a beetle. But you're so buff and so strong, I'm nervous, Forrest Gump. My fingertips and my lips, they burn from the cigarettes. Forrest Gump, you run my mind, boy. Running on my mind, boy, Forrest Gump. I saw your game, Forrest. I was screaming, run 44. But you kept running past the end zone. Oh, where'd you go, Forrest? Forrest Gump. You're a strange man, Luke.
Oh, that was beautiful, Mike.
See, I thought you were going to give me some random Drake lyrics to quote because we're playing Drake this week. It's probably for the better.
Well, that wraps our new segment.
More to come.
So, the Grizz game this week.
So, the Grizz take on Drake. Drake is from the Pioneer League Conference. Is that right, Luke?
That's right.
Their first game last week was rained out.
You guys are hearing the pod dog, Mike's adorable golden retriever.
He just apparently randomly wants some attention.
Oh, I'll give you some attention, huh?
We're getting it from Luke here. So Drake, they're from the non-scholarship Pioneer League. Most of you would probably recognize that San Diego is from the non-scholarship Pioneer League. And San Diego has actually beat Big Sky teams in the playoffs each of the last two seasons.
So this isn't a terrible...
No, I mean, it's...
Conference.
It's not a good conference either, but it's, you know, it's an FCS game that counts towards the official number of FCS or higher D1 wins. They've never made the playoffs, so we'll see. Interestingly enough, my favorite... Well, actually, there's a lot of favorite former MSU coaches on my list, but, Ash, they hired him from Drake.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, came from Drake.
That didn't come up in my research.
I don't know why it would.
I did notice that this team also exists in the state of Iowa.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're having a real Iowa-heavy preseason.
Yeah.
Pre-conference season.
I did notice that these are just non-important fun facts. Drake began competing in football in the year 1893.
Well, all right.
And during the 1926 homecoming activities... Babe Ruth visited and suited up for Drake during a scrimmage.
Well, that is an interesting bit of information.
Can you imagine a Yankees player today playing in a football scrimmage?
I feel like the contract would prevent him. Like, no, you cannot go play in a football scrimmage. Like, just like you can't skydive. Was he sitting there chain smoking? Or was he, how on earth did he end up at the Drake football scrimmage?
There were beers involved.
Well, probably. Drake put, I think it's four players on the preseason All Pioneer Football League team. Nathan Clayburgh, a defensive player, looks like 44 tackles and five tackles for a loss, 2.5 sacks last season. Steve Doran, one of the top receivers in the Pioneer League. He had 790 yards last year and 8 touchdown catches. Jordan Lewinsky looks like he must be a lineman. I'm not reading a real good review of these guys. This is a poorly written article. Sean Lynch. Lynch was a 2017 first team all Pioneer League honoree. He led Drake last year with 72 tackles and helped lead the defense to less than 200 passing yards per game.
So that's about all we're going to get about Drake because there won't be any game film.
Yeah, because there was no game.
There was no game. They were set to play William Jewell College. God knows where that's from. Where they're from. But the game was canceled due to massive storms in the area.
So the thing about Drake is we should be able to line up and run the formations we want to run. I don't think they've got a game plan so much for them. I mean, I'm sure they know what type of team they are, you know, and that sort of stuff. But I'm not convinced that this game's not going to be more about trying to get more guys some playing time, you know, rotate a few guys in. We didn't see Ray Green at all last week. We didn't see Cam Humphreys take any snaps. So I think that's probably goal number one. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I'll be curious to see, and I doubt they'll break it out against Drake, but I wonder if we won't see it against Western Illinois in 2 weeks when we travel there, is, you know, going back to talking about Snead taking the hits and also we need a running game. I kind of wonder if they won't insert some RPO, some run-pass option packages, or some zone read type stuff, because Snead's athletic enough to do it, and we've got a lot of running backs. And if the traditional run it up the middle isn't going to work. We need to have some running threat. So mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see if we don't see that a little bit more in the coming weeks.
That's pretty insightful prediction. I like that. I hope to see that.
Yeah, we'll see.
So what do we think, Mike? The Grizzlies should win this game. We're at home, and this is a non-scholarship FCS team. This is well within our grasp.
The Grizzlies should win this game. I hope, well, I'm sure they're taking seriously, because one of the trademarks of Bobby Houck is that he convinces his team that they're going to lose to everybody every week. So I'm sure that they'll come out. I'm sure they'll be prepared. I actually think next week might be fun, because I think we're going to see them correct some of the mental mistakes they did. And I expect it to be a good game. Should we want to run through the Big Sky real quick and see where we're at?
Yeah, let's do that.
So Portland State, you know, coming off of the shellacking at FBS Nevada, travels to Oregon.
Oof.
So I'm just going to go ahead and pick that. I'm just going to go ahead and fill in here that both Luke and I are going to take Oregon, right?
I want to be the team that plays Portland State in week 3 after they've had their ass kicked for 2 straight weeks.
Yikes.
They might not have a lot of healthy players.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Northern Colorado is at South Dakota. South Dakota is another Missouri Valley Football Conference team, not one of the perennial leaders, but usually on the upswing.
So it's in South Dakota.
Yep.
I'm going to take South Dakota.
I think I'm going to take South Dakota as well. Though if Northern Colorado came back and won that, it's going to be more of a, yeah, we should have seen that coming sort of thing. We'll talk about Drake at Montana in a minute here. Eastern Washington and Northern Arizona. So this stupid conference where we have more teams in football than we can schedule every year means that if you don't play a conference foe in the conference schedule, you can schedule them as a non-conference opponent. So Eastern Washington and Northern Arizona are playing this week. And it's interesting because I think, you know, we talked about it in the preview, NAU's got the easiest conference schedule in the league for the contenders in my mind. And if they get beat by Eastern Washington here, they could still win the auto bid because I think Eastern Washington's got a tougher conference schedule. Nonetheless, it should be a good game.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this game. And I think Northern Arizona is going to win this.
Okay, I'm going to take Eastern Washington just because if Eastern Washington is as good as we think, I feel like they should win that on the road. If NAU beats Eastern, then I think that the criticism of NAU and the soft schedule maybe isn't fair. So okay. We'll see. Idaho plays Western New Mexico. Who the hell is Western New Mexico?
I've never heard of them. It's a regional New Mexico school.
So are they not even FCS?
Western New Mexico is an NCAA Division II team.
Man.
And they play in the Lone Star Conference.
So not only, I hate it when Big Sky teams play down. I get that you've got to fill the schedule, but come on. Like, this is not good for the conference. That being said, Idaho is going to win.
Idaho's going to win this game.
I think it's going to be interesting, Idaho, to watch as the year goes on, because losing that first game to the FBS, because a lot of those players, you know, one of them at Media Day talked about how we were recruited to be FBS and that's our expectation, and they just get shellacked by a bad FBS team. Like, I wonder if those older players are really going to keep motivation. I think Idaho is going to be interesting to watch. So Montana State goes to South Dakota State.
I think South Dakota State's going to win this.
I do too. Montana State almost beat South Dakota State last year, I believe, in Bozeman, but they couldn't pull it out. Or did they? No, they didn't pull it out. I think South Dakota State at home wins this. Interestingly enough, South Dakota State's game was rained out last week, too. Everybody playing down around Nebraska, the weather screwed them all up.
And there's a rumor out there that Troy Anderson broke a bone in his non-throwing hand.
You know, that's a rumor, and we're not media guys, so I really have no idea if that's true or not.
He's listed as their number one still.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much it would really matter if he broke a bone in his non-throwing hand. Because even if you broke a bone in your throwing hand, he only has to throw it 8 yards.
As long as you...
He's only capable of throwing it 8 yards.
As long as you can catch the snap and get it into your throwing hand, then I think you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Southern Utah at Oregon State.
Well, after Southern Utah losing last week. I kind of think Oregon State's going to beat them this time.
So I think you're right, but I'm going to pick Southern Utah. And the only reason I'm going to do that is because I can see them being so embarrassed that they recommit. And I don't think Oregon State's that good of a team.
It's in Corvallis.
Yeah, we'll see.
On the road, Southern Utah.
Sac State is going to San Diego State, Bobby's old team.
I've got San Diego State here.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, that's another one of those where Sac State is on the up, but I don't think they are going to pull that upset off. Weber State goes to Cal Poly.
I'm taking Weber.
Yeah, me too. San Diego, the aforementioned San Diego, is at UC Davis. I'm going to take Davis as well. Not that San Diego isn't good, but I think that Davis's offense is going to be too much for them to keep up with.
So we basically agree on most of the games.
We do, yeah.
Except you picked Portland State.
No, I did not pick Portland State. Don't try and pull that shit in. I picked East Washington. You picked NAU. I picked Southern Utah. You picked Oregon State. But yeah, we're gonna chalk it up a lot this week. Looks like a couple of the teams might have a bye. Did I get everybody?
Yep, you got everyone.
All right, sounds good. Well, there's the Big Sky. So then we can shift back to, you know, picking the Montana game. I don't think there's a lot of suspense this week. But before we do that, you know, we talked about what were the Grizz needs last week.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about it again. What do you think the Grizz need to do this week to win?
I think if the Grizz win the turnover game, they're going to win this game.
I think that's fair. They should win the turnover game. I mean, I think the biggest thing the Grizz need to do to win is probably just show up. I mean, I know as a fan I could say that, but it's like this Grizz team should beat Drake. This is what, if you look at this matchup with any coach we've had in the last 20 years, and this should be a win with this roster. So yeah, win the turnover battle. I think that the big thing they need to do this week is execute the fundamentals well, don't make some of the same mistakes they made in the second half on special teams, and get younger guys playing time.
Hypothetical.
Okay.
The Grizz jumped up to number 14 in the polls, right?
In the stats poll. Yep.
In the stats poll. After beating Northern Iowa. If the Grizz lose to Drake at home, where do they fall?
I would think they fall out. I mean, I don't know, but I would think they fall out. I think that we were ranked in the polls this year as more of a cautious, like, well, Bobby Houck is coming back. He's a good coach. Let's see what happens. And then we beat a high-ranked team, and the voters are like, oh, yeah. He's going to turn them around. Because the reality is, it's like, you know, we've had winning seasons the last 3 years, and we have a lot of young talent. So I think the voters just don't really know what to think of us. But if we lost to Drake at home, I would hope we get kicked out of the top 25.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else?
I think that wraps up the week.
Yeah, you know, I know that we really gave you a lot of groundbreaking information on Drake. We'll do better next time.
Because we have a bye week next time.
So I think the bye is a little bit later in the season. I think that
you're right.
Some of the overconfident folks in the room might be thinking this is our bye. But remember what happened on our bye game, quote-unquote, last year?
Yeah.
Reese Phillips had the grossest injury I've ever seen. So it's like the game is played and stuff happens.
I'm sick now.
Yeah. Drake, you know, it's going to be interesting to see them. Their coach is in their fifth year, 26-18. You look at their stats and they're just middling. We should beat them. That's all the more we need. We should beat them.
All right. Well, I hope that happens, man.
We're not going to pick point spread for you, though, because we don't know what it is.
Well, everyone, thanks for listening.
Yep. We'll see you. We won't see you. You'll hear us next week. And if you know us, you'll probably hear from us before then.